Welcome to the new era of the Inside the Locker podcast.
Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
We're going to get to what our tagline is in just a minute, but before we do that, I think it's important that we introduce the cast of characters back for season two. They all survived. With me, as always, JC De Leon.
What's up?
Adam Charles.
Hello.
Logan Urie.
What's up?
And Elliot Fontanette.
It's okay.
I got that shit in your head, didn't I?
It's fine.
So this is the Inside the Locker podcast. For longtime listeners of the show, this is a two-year-old show. Am I right?
Yep, we are. Yeah, actually, are we officially 2 years old now?
Yep, we started in July.
This is the part of the show where Brian will come on and he'll say, "We're the show that does XYZ for XYZ by XYZ." But this is kind of the new era, and so I think it's really important that everyone that listens to this kind of be a part of this process. What is our tagline? What is this show going to be about? What do you want this show to be about? Inside the Locker, what comes next? We'll start with Elliot.
I don't know, like, one of the things I would like it to be more of a discussion about sports, but also how, you know, geek things like movies, comic books, all that affect it. And maybe we've finally gotten out of the lockers and we're no longer stuffed inside them.
That's great, okay. But I'm looking for a tagline.
Oh, sorry. Long day. Sorry, dude. I'll come up with a tagline.
So we'll go to Adam Charles. Inside the Locker.
Let's see. What are we about? Geeks? I'm going to fill in the blanks in a minute. Just talking out loud. So, geeks, sports, movies, comic books. I got nothing. JC, what do you got?
Well, I am unfortunately really bad at this sort of thing. We're weekly. Sometimes, most of the time. Right now, we're kind of in the doldrums of summer, so we don't hold us to weekly right now. But football season, basketball season, definitely weekly. We're nerdy.
Okay. What I'm getting right now is Inside the Locker. Sometimes we talk about things.
Oh yeah.
I'm good with that if you guys are. Inside the Locker, sometimes.
Sometimes we talk about things.
Well, it's like maybe like trivial talk about trivial things.
No, once something exciting happens, we'll talk about it.
All right.
Yeah.
When something exciting happens, we will get to discussing it bi-weekly or weekly. I think that's the tagline.
Yeah,
maybe.
For the time being. You know what? I think it works.
Yeah. I think that's good. Real quick, I'm going to let you guys brainstorm while I pay some bills. All right. So we are the weekly sports podcast. We're hosted by nerds. For nerds, and it's very, very key here that you follow us on Twitter at ITLcast, that you like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/oneofusnet spelled out. And tell your friends about it. Subscribe to us on iTunes. All right, let's go back to the tagline. Inside the Locker, JC.
Something akin to the weekly sports podcast for non-sports nerds.
Okay.
Because our aim is.
You know what? I dig that, because that's kind of the idea. The idea is that we're the nerds who have bought into the whole sports, the sports culture.
Yeah.
And we're trying to appeal to the nerds who haven't yet, and we're trying to make it seem like that there is a sexiness to it that's outside of the whole, you know,
the whole jock
nerd dichotomy going on.
Inside, like, the Locker, it's the gateway drug of sports.
Yeah, hey, as kind of a recap.
No, we're close. We're knocking on the door. We're not quite there yet, because it needs to snap. You want to put it on a pin and wear it. Inside the Locker, we're close. Now, nerds is an interesting word. Are we nerds? What is a nerd? How do you define nerd? This is a geek website. I think it's important that we commit to the fact that I think in our hearts we kind of are nerds. I know that right now you're listening to like a very cool, very put together person, but certainly I was in the high school marching band. I was in the high school yearbook club, high school newspaper, high school Latin club.
This is sounding dweeby.
So I definitely have, I would say, nerdy credentials.
Nerdy, I think those tendencies.
Are. I don't know. Is that dweeb? Is that dweeby or is that nerdy? I don't know.
I don't. I think nerd is more like.
I've always associated a nerd with intelligence. Yeah. Not saying you're not intelligent.
I wasn't that smart.
I just feel like nerd is like you do what you like, and if somebody doesn't like it, they can just not like it. But you like it, and you like it a lot.
See, to me, that sounds like geek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think a lot about my cousin Alejandro, who's currently 17 years old in El Paso, Texas. He has a deep and profound love for video games and for comic books, to the point where he struggles to sort of convey all of that love and hold a normal conversation, because his conversations are all centered on, like, so then this guy happened, and this guy did this, and then this guy did that. But I don't think that's... I think sometimes people can be maybe dysfunctional, but I don't see that a love and a devotion to traditionally geeky things is in any way an unappealing human trait. I think it's something that's good.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I think it's, you know, part of the reason that the podcast started was to show that, you know, you can be geeky about movies, comic books, anime, all that stuff, but some of the biggest geeks I've ever met in my life are people who go to LSU and camp out all goddamn weekend just to not go to the game. They don't even have tickets. They just want to sit there and eat a bunch of food and talk about LSU football, talk about college football, but going to, like, a Comic-Con is weird.
Interesting.
Like, you're just as interested in what you're into. So just sort of that bridging that gap and showing, like, a kumbaya thing that, you know, we all understand each other playing. It's fine.
And I think we all, to some degree, all kind of fall in both camps, you know, in some capacity, you know. For me, it's movies. Elliot, I'm assuming it's either anime or comic books.
Oh.
Okay. JC, you may be almost all sports. For the, oh, yeah. You know, like, I think of the most of us, you're probably the most... Sports-minded, I think.
Are you saying he's the most jockey?
He's the most jockey.
Yeah, and I am. I did play sports in high school. I almost played football in college.
Whoa.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, I had a knee injury my senior year. Mm. Then I kind of... It wasn't too serious, but it was just kind of like, I think I'm done with football. And yeah, my nerdiness, all things non-sports, developed kind of late. And so... Because I grew up in an area in Texas where, because I'm a big guy and because I was good at football, hey, guess what my focus was and what everybody's focus laid upon me was? It was only football.
You say you knew Coach Taylor.
Yeah. But I always liked movies, and it's like, it should have been more obvious to me all along how much I liked movies and comic books and things like, and video games and things like that, and it just wasn't very obvious to me until I was in my 20s. So it's kind of why... My knowledge isn't quite up there as it is, like, with Adam on movies and things like that, but, yeah, I'm kind of almost nerdily encyclopedic about sports.
Now, Adam, didn't you play football as well?
I did.
See, I don't know.
I come from a big athletic family.
I don't know so. How our listeners feel about the fact that, you know, this is the Inside the Locker podcast for geeks by geeks.
Two of us,
two ex-jocks here.
I'll say this: like,
that makes that what that makes me uncomfortable.
I'll say that I have so much geek in me that I can make up for these two.
You are a giant nerd.
Well, you would talk about, you see, I had a 17-year-old cousin in El Paso, and he's really geeky. He doesn't know how to explain it. I had an English project my senior year of high school, and we had to do a presentation about our favorite piece of literature. I drew a chalkboard size replica of a Superman comic book, and described a Superman crossover. In detail for 45 minutes.
Yeah, that,
and
you know,
so yeah,
it's amazing that they let you go that long.
Yeah,
you know, something else interesting that I want to touch on just a little bit. This is a new show from on a demographic level. Three out of our five cast members are men of color. It almost doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter, but I
also just noticed that we're separated by the sides of the table.
it's kind of messed up. Elliot, it's a different existence to grow up as someone with geeky tastes and also be a little boy or girl of color.
Geeky tastes.
What was that upbringing like for you?
I don't know. I think it's easier and harder in the same breath. Like, it's harder with your family because they do expect you to not be into that as much. But it's a lot easier in society. Like, I tell this to my girlfriend all the time, and I say, I feel like I've gotten, like, a Will Smith curve, where, like, no matter how geeky I am, because I'm black, like, people give me, like, this level of coolness that I don't deserve. Because, like, if I was white, like, they would perceive me, I feel like, as just the geekiest who ever lived. Because I'm black, it's like, oh, you know you down. And I'm like, well, I do know Earthling and Fire. You know all those songs, and I know how to do the cha-cha slide. Like, there's certain things that you just know.
Yeah, absolutely. I too know the cha-cha slide. all right. Logan, you've been quiet. What does being a geek mean to you?
Oh, man, I'm just sitting here riding the levels. That's all I know. being a geek to me, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you a story real quick. Sixth grade, young 12, 13-year-old Logan first got introduced to comic books to the extent where I first met a character called Wolverine. And
never heard of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems
and,
like a jerk.
And first discovered that said Wolverine was named Logan, which no one else I've ever heard in my entire life was named Logan. And, you know, this was in 1993 or whatever, so, you know, the name was not as prevalent as it is has been lately. And that just created this entirely new passion for me. me and some friends just spent all of our time reading comic books, collecting comic cards, instead of baseball cards. That was what we did instead.
Yeah, like the Fleer Ultras.
Oh, yeah, man.
To be fair, you know, I was also a jock growing up, but I had at least the first three sets right before they came out with the Marvel Masterpieces. I collected the comic book cards.
The ones that, like, fit together?
Yeah.
Those were awesome.
Yeah.
The Fleer 94, the Fleer 95, absolutely. Those were sensational. I was in a comic book shop buying those when Kurt Cobain died.
Wow.
I remember that moment very
clearly. Damn.
All right. So we've touched on a little bit. We're gonna poll our audience. This is usually the part of the show where Brian takes questions from his Twitter feed. Unfortunately, I don't have access to it, so I apologize if you've tweeted us questions.
Doesn't trust us.
Don't have the passwords yet. But what we will do is move on to headlines. And while we do that, I want to play you guys the beginning of this Drake song that perfectly encapsulates how I feel about this first headline.
Do we have the rights for this?
No. All right, so this is our first headline with Ramona Mary's Inside the Locker, the new class. It was a bloody and painful 4th of July weekend for one particular reason. Fireworks. So, JC, why don't you tell us what happened?
So, yeah, it was a bad weekend for Jason Pierre-Paul of the New York Giants and C.J. Wilson of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. After this 4th of July weekend, between the two of them, they now collectively have 17 fingers.
And probably fewer brain cells.
Yeah.
What's terrible is this isn't funny, but it's funny.
It's just funny.
Yeah. They both, in two separate instances, injured their hands in fireworks mishaps. Jason Pierre-Paul is a starter. He was tagged the franchise player for the New York Giants. Had his right finger amputated. It's still up in the air whether or not...
The finger?
Well, no. It's still up in the air whether or not the Giants are going to pull that contract or what's going to happen with him. Only thing anyone knows right now is he has an amputated right index finger and a fractured thumb.
The index finger too. That's like your most important one.
That's your swim move finger.
He's a defensive end.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you guys. You guys are ex football players. You guys are big guys too. Can he still be? Because this is Jason Pierre-Paul, perennial monster in the NFC. He's one of the most dominant players in the league. You lose your index finger. You know, I think here as a simpleton. Okay, well, I don't have a finger, but all I got to do is get off the line. Plow through the defender, just kind of be a terror. How big of a deal is this for the guys?
It's a big disadvantage in that I never played defensive end, but I did play offensive tackle. And so one thing I know about defensive ends that offensive tackles cannot legally do is that defensive ends can grab the shit out of your jersey.
And so swing the fuck out of you.
Yeah, and so that's going to be a big disadvantage for him. With four fingers and a thumb, you'll still be able to grip. But
that's
who knows how.
I think that's the bigger thing is the condition of his thumb. You can lose probably your, you know what? As a comparison, Ronnie Lott, considered one of the greatest safeties of all, one of the greatest defensive players of all time. In the middle of a game, as a matter of fact, he had to get his pinky amputated. I can't remember why, but he got his pinky, the tip of his pinky amputated, came back the next week and played. So you it's not that you can't play without it. Your effectiveness is probably, as far as the defensive end goes. Now, if he was a receiver, he's probably done for his career. Unless he's Odell Beckham and only needs three fingers to catch the ball.
But, just a velociraptor.
Yeah, but for the most part, a defensive end, it's not that your career is over, but your effectiveness with that hand, and your hands are a big part. They're a bigger part than people would probably more than likely give you credit for, having been a pivotal part of your body, being a defensive end. But if you can't grip, you do have a disadvantage over being able to control the left the tackles that are in front of you. And for him, I think a lot of his game is based off of speed. Like he's a pretty athletic kind of defensive end. So
if he's a speed rusher, he might be okay.
Yeah,
but if he's a bull rusher, he's definitely
I mean, for speed rushers, usually like a swim move is a very typical move, and usually with a swim move you push with your left. If you're a left defensive end, you push with your left hand, you swim over with your right, and you're kind of like pushing back with your right elbow. Yeah. So it may not affect him terribly. Of the two injuries between the two players, C.J. Wilson definitely got the worst of it, not because he lost the extra thumb, the extra finger, but because he's a cornerback, his ability to actually catch the ball and be an effective interception specialist, it goes out the window.
Not only that, he's a cornerback. I believe he was a backup in his second or third year off of a slightly above minimum contract, so his career is probably done.
Right. Like now, at this point, he's now completely disposable.
Yeah.
As disposable as his fingers were.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. That's cold, man.
I'd like to joke. I'd like to talk about this in a playful way. But this is horrible news.
It's bad news for two guys, but you don't know how much of it is due to stupidity. The unfortunate part is, and it's only unfortunate to us only because we want to know how stupid they were with fireworks hurt you. Okay, don't put them. Watch Armageddon. All you need to do is watch Armageddon and understand what it is they say about fireworks. Don't hold them in your hand. And if you're going to put them in your hand, well, leave it open.
Yeah. Or your wife's going to be open all the catcher's balls for you.
Thank you. So,
and players complain a lot about the franchise tag, but this is the reason why the franchise tag exists. Like, the Giants didn't completely trust Jason Pierre-Paul, didn't know if he was mature enough to handle a $60 million contract, so they only offered him the $16 million. and so, I mean, this is the reason why the franchise tag exists.
And now he can't even sign his name.
Just get the
scalp. I was a little discouraged on Monday or Tuesday, because this happens every holiday, every big holiday weekend. You know, people do really stupid things and die, and there's just like no empathy for them. Like there's always someone in every comment like, well, Darwinism at play. Well, yeah, what an idiot. Well, what a redneck. Yeah, someone died.
Hey, I'm sitting right here.
hey, that sucks.
No,
that sucks,
man. I agree with you, but there was a headline this last week where...
The alligator.
This guy was told, hey, we saw an 11-foot gator. Don't jump in the water. And he goes, literally, his last words were, fuck that alligator. And he got fucking eaten. And the best part, he was chewed on. And the alligator goes, oh, I don't like this type of meat. Spits him out. And they find him just chewed on. So he didn't even serve any purpose.
Yeah. Well, that is kind of... It's a funny headline. It's a funny coincidence. But think of all the just stupid things that we've done and said. And again, it's just like, the dude died. It just sucks.
Stupidity shouldn't unfortunately cost you a career or your life, you know?
Yeah.
There should be consequences, but you hope that it doesn't, that the consequences are not so dire that it costs you $15 million.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing.
You know, it's interesting
that
about
being
that.
Said, he is alive, and he does still have 9 fingers.
Yeah, he's going to be all right.
Hopefully 8 of them work.
Hopefully he saved his money.
And
he's still a celebrity, too.
And he has made a decent amount of money within 4 years. Yeah. So,
and he won't have concussions.
So it's okay to, as a Cowboys fan, to just be like,
thank fucking God, because of the people on the Giants defense who I actually really give a shit about, the one person I would hope would be stupid enough to do something like this would be Jason Pierre-Paul.
I was actually, when my wife read that on Twitter, I was like,
Yes.
My first reaction was like, I should be happy about this. But
see, I was just surprised that Les Miles has blown his entire head off at this point. Man, it's so fucking crazy.
It's rough. All right, so fireworks.
He's too busy eating grass.
Yeah. So take away from this. Fireworks, bad.
Don't hold them in your hand. Don't be irresponsible. Don't drink and then light fireworks. Let's try not to do that.
That's a good rule.
Or do podcasts. That's...
Hey. Don't say true shit.
All right, we're going to move on.
You got too real.
You know, this probably should have been our headline, because we're also coming off of the most watched soccer game in United States history, the U.S. Women's
officially
national team.
It was actually officially. I saw that. It was 26.7 million viewers. U.S. viewers.
That's
And that is the highest. That is the highest rated soccer game, highest viewed soccer game in American history.
And our ladies, our women, won the World Cup, powered by kind of this indomitable system, a little home cooking. Playing just north of the border there in Vancouver. An incredible hat trick from Carly Lloyd.
That last goal was amazing.
A team with purpose, a team that was completely united, a team that wanted to win it for its captain, its sort of emotional leader, Abby Wambach. So, phenomenal. Now, did you guys watch it? And if you did, will you be back the next time the U.S. women play?
I watched the first 20 minutes, and I think I got the gist of it by about then. Mm-hmm.
I watched it on and off.
It was practically the Germany Brazil game of the World Cup.
Yeah, right. A little bit.
Yeah. When it became as much of a blur as it was, I don't remember what else I was watching. I should have just kept it on the soccer game.
It's fun to watch whatever your team is on the giving end of that kind of a blowout. That's so much fun.
No, it is.
Oh yeah,
it's like 97 with the Bulls Jazz when they blew them out in the finals that one game. Mm.
Game but, four or five.
Yeah, but I mean. Yes, and don't get me wrong, like, it's fantastic. In terms of being elated, like, it's, you know, you can't be any more elated than that. But you do kind of want some drama.
Would have been nice to have a competitive game, episode, but we got all that and then some back in 2011.
Well, we did get a little drama, because apparently Americans don't know how to win well. Like, some Americans...
Said who?
What?
Says who?
Hey, fuck
says
you, buddy.
Me, right?
Says me. Americans got on Twitter and were like, just telling like really horrible jokes.
Oh, the Pearl Harbor jokes?
Yeah, it's like, dude, it's 60 years ago. Let's just move on.
None of those people were alive.
Hey, I saw that movie.
That's the point.
Not that great.
Yeah, speaking of Michael Bay.
I don't know, I was just sort of ashamed for our country. I'm like, come on, people, just win well.
We are pretty petulant.
Those are the moments where like the hive mind does kind of annoy me, because I was like, none of these jokes are funny. I don't know.
Feel like that's the bad part. The bad part is that it's not that we're bad winners so much as it is we're not clever at the same time.
Right.
I think American audiences are getting to a point now in the last 5 years where they're really excited about these like summer international tournaments. But they don't know how to turn off the racism. Like, they get so excited. They just forget to turn off their racist filter.
They need, like, a methadone racist clinic.
They just need to just calm down a little bit. Just don't be racist. It's just so easy to not be racist that it's, like, amazing how racists are celebrating. Yes, you're right. Japanese jokes. Every time that there's a game against a Latin American country, hey, go back to Cuba, Mexico.
It's kind of an American tradition, though. At this
that's
point,
true.
Like, it you know, is. It's like, I mean, it's really just it's the international thing that really brings out the racism part. Whereas, you know, like if you're just talking about like college football, it's just about hey, you're a redneck state school, blah, 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 whatever. You know,
it's
finding some way to
you, you
belittle.
You can't have both. You know what? You can't throw out the racism and not also throw out the superiority complex with it.
Yeah.
I feel like the superiority complex is what gets them into watching soccer. Like, yeah, we could play this fucking game and we just win this shit. And like, yeah, we fucking won it. I told you. Go back to wherever it just came from. And then, you know, I feel like if you get rid of that, well, then now they won't watch.
That's true.
I see you've read my memo.
Yeah. Hey, you're right.
I'm not condoning racism, by the way. Okay?
as the white side of the
table. But if racism is going to exist, have them be pro-American, I guess, at the same time.
If you think about it, like, if Croatia plays Italy, there's a bunch of racism, right? Like the Croatian fans will yell ethnic slurs at Italy's one black player, Mario Balotelli, right?
I've read how this is a thing in like amongst Europeans.
It's insane, man. But here's the issue, right? Like, it's Croatia, so you're like, they're Croatia. Who gives a fuck? But like, we're like, the rich high school kid in every 80s movie. You know what I mean? Like, it, just by the fact that we're the United States of America. Like,
but it's the best part, though.
Yeah, and I think that's why people like it, is because like it's the one time that we can kind of be the underdog, you know, and it can feel like a fair fight. But we have like all the money and all the resources, and we're the third biggest country in the world, and like it's a weird dynamic that I struggle to get on board with. And so we were talking about this before we came on. Hey, where are all the Latina women on the U.S. women's national team? Where are all the black women? There's like one. It's like Sydney LaRue. We had like a keeper a couple years ago. A lot of that's cultural. A topic for another discussion. We're going to put a pin in it, and we're going to move on.
Well, what do you think about the if the popularity is going to be sustained? Like, do you think people will still continue? Like, I've read about how what's the women's league? USNW National Women's.
See, NWA? I don't know that.
I think it's
not NWA.
I think it's.
I would watch more of that.
I think it's the NWSL, National Women's League. National Women's Soccer League. Those ticket sales are exploding, but I don't know how sustainable that is.
I don't think it's. I mean, it's a shame, but like, yeah, they're not getting paid.
And yes, thank you, National Women's Soccer League. That's what it is.
Abby Wambach didn't play club soccer between World Cups. She was just kind of chilling. So yeah, that is certainly the big. I would love to support a team like that. I'd love to have a team like that in our backyard. We might have one. I don't know.
I do feel to some degree it is a little bit cultural. You know what? I don't know exactly how prominent soccer is for females and the Hispanic and black communities here in the United States. Similar to like tennis. You know, it's like, I don't know, I wouldn't equate soccer to like a country club sport like tennis, but it feels like it did take a long time before people took an interest in playing it. So,
well,
where are they? They may be doing something else. They may be running track. They may be, you know, there's only, it is a certain type, like, it is a very skillful sport. Like, you do have to kind of get started a little bit early.
It's a very suburban sport.
I was going to say, it's a minivan.
Like,
and soccer in this country is a minivan and orange slice of sport. And in every other country in the world, it's what basketball is here, where you're a kid from the streets and you're playing with a wall all of your life.
It's strange because I guess I don't see it. I do get that mentality of it. Like, it is a very suburban, like the suburban soccer mom kind of thing. Yeah. It is very, you know, it's very much white culture to get started, I guess, that early. But I don't know. I'm wondering whether or not they even have any interest in playing it when they are young.
If it was presented, but it's not as bad as like NASCAR. NASCAR to me is a sport that is transparently for. Okay, well, we're not having minorities in this sport because it's just driving, right? We're gonna be good. It's gonna be fine. Because
it requires no athletic ability.
Yeah, it just requires sponsors. So it's like, yeah, we're gonna.
I think that's the NASCAR tagline. It's NASCAR. We're just driving, right? Yeah.
There's no running.
We're gonna turn left sometimes.
So, as the motorsport fan at the table, I actually would like to say that being a driver and those things is incredibly athletic.
It is too.
You know what? There are some badass women drivers out there, like Danica Patrick.
Yeah.
That's freaking
incredible. I'm not saying it can't be done, but there definitely was a shift about 15 years ago when they were like,
sure,
Tiger Woods is a thing now. What's our next sport?
It's mostly because it's a Southern thing, to be honest. Yeah. Let's be honest here.
I swear to God, my buddy Robert Rich, shout out to Robert Rich, who is absolutely not listening to this right now, but yeah, I went to his wedding, and the pastor made the whole wedding sermon about how to have a NASCAR marriage. And he had a NASCAR cake. He had a giant cake that was in the shape of his favorite NASCAR driver, who I believe was Jeff Gordon.
It was a car.
Jeff Gordon's car was his groom's cake.
It was a human being.
So yeah, it's super.
It wasn't
popular.
Like a wax statue. It was basically a cake.
But I like NASCAR. I think NASCAR is.
Jeff Gordon popped out of the cake.
I think it's an incredible feat. All right. So again, basically, will the fan base stick around and support women's soccer at the club level? Hmm. It just about never does. But it would be pretty cool if it did.
I like to think that. I think like much like a lot of other sports, where there's going to be a win thing. It's going to continue in popularity for a while. The unfortunate thing that you really only see this type of prominence every 4 years, and so because of that, it's going to wane after a little while. I think that like a win like this is going to inspire a future generation of women, which is going to create a new level of talent, which will help us in the future. Whether or not this is going to be up in like NBA or NFL levels, no, that's not going
to
happen.
It would be nice to see Alex Morgan get a Jason Pierre Paul kind of contract.
Sure,
it would be awesome. But
and she doesn't need the fingers. So. She,
yeah, but the yeah, I mean you're right. Million 26 25. What was the final number there, Adam?
26.7-ish.
26.7 million people, presumably many of them women, watched what happened, and I think you're gonna stick with it, and I think that's pretty cool.
Well, I think this is gonna be the one sport in America that, if the sport does take off, it's gonna be the women's sport that takes off, not the men's sport.
Hmm.
Like, I think it's just, I think women's soccer is more interesting to watch. Like, men just tend to flop the entire time.
Let's not get crazy.
No. Well, again, let's, you know, we want to talk about what American soccer is. And look at how far Major League Soccer has come in the last 20 years, attracting. And I think this is significant because we all know that around 2007, MLS brought in David Beckham, and he's famous and handsome, and married to one of the top four or five Spice Girls. But he also was, you know, north of 30, and was just kind of here to make money and collect checks and to be a figure. But what MLS is doing now, you know, Italian player named Giovinco that they poached from Serie A, playing in his prime, in his 20s, playing for Toronto. They're very close to signing Giovanni Dos Santos, who's starting for the Mexican national team, signing him away from the league in Spain. Very close to signing Javier Hernandez from Mexico, in his prime, away from Manchester United. Very close to bringing in Ronaldo in a couple of years, who will be in his prime. Brought Kaká, who's like an insane British legend. So there's some interesting stuff brewing with MLS. They also have been incubating talent in the Central American countries, in Panama, in other Central American countries that I can't name at the moment. So, like, it is what they're doing as an incubator is pretty cool, and I enjoy it. They're like one of those insufferable startup incubators. Look, that's enough goddamn soccer talk for right now.
I'm just waiting for them to bring back Pele. That's really good.
You know what? Okay, you said bring in Ronaldo in his prime. Is Ronaldo just a title that transfers from one person? They like transfers from one person to the next. I feel like the fucker's been alive for 50 years.
It's the best Spanish soccer player from generation to generation.
So it's like James, is it like, it's like James Bond?
Yeah, it's
exactly.
Like,
it's
like
Ronaldo.
It's like do you,
we need the blonde Ronaldo this time. He's so ugly, but he's Bond, so it's cool.
That's fantastic.
Am I fucking wrong, though? Has there not been, like, four Ronaldos?
No, in Portuguese, when you're playing soccer, you have your name. Your name is, like, Bob Johnson, but then you get your nickname, and that's the name. Like the guy, there's a Brazilian player named Hulk. His name is not just Hulk.
Yeah, Hogan.
That's his, like, he looks like a little Hulk, and so when he was playing, everyone in Brazil was like, oh, we're going to call him Hulk, and that just stuck.
Oh, so there was, like, the original Ronaldo, and then everybody else looked like him, so they just kept...
There's been one Ronaldo.
It sounds like Zorro.
There was little Ronaldo.
It's like a horrible rapper.
There was Ronaldo, and then there was Ronaldinho. Inyo means, like, little, so there was Ronaldinho, and those guys kind of, like... Periscoped.
That's where I think you're confused.
Well, into each other. And now there's Cristiano Ronaldo, who is not Brazilian, he's Portuguese. And he's, you know, one of the two or three best soccer players of our time.
So basically, what happens is if I want to have a child who is good at soccer, I name them Ronaldo. Like if I want to have a child who wants to be great at stripping, I call them Barbie.
You wouldn't know. No, well, anyway, all right.
Cinnamon is the name.
Cinnamon is the name. All right, so look. I apologize to the listeners. I promise you we won't talk about soccer this much. But also, you guys have to understand, I'm a Latino man, and I can kind of get off on a little bit of a tangent. So I implore our cast here to keep me focused. Speaking of focus,
all I'm saying is, like, I wouldn't make promises you can't keep.
Speaking of Ronaldo, we need to talk about NBA free agency. Winners, losers, and I think we have to start with DeAndre Jordan.
Yep.
Led the NBA in rebounding for 2 years.
Oop.
One of the most dominant players in the league. One of the game-changing players in the league. Made the Los Angeles Clippers, my Los Angeles Clippers, one of the best teams in the league. Reportedly left them for Dallas. And then...
He's a Texas kid.
And then on Thursday night, there was a last-minute sort of intervention.
An assist.
And there was an assist, if you will.
And now he's not going to Dallas. Now he's going to stay with Los Angeles. And now they become one of the two or three scariest teams in the league. I kind of want to ask you guys, JC, I want to start with you. Do you think this move happens? Do you think that play for DeAndre Jordan's heart happens if LaMarcus Aldridge doesn't sign with San Antonio? Do you think it was an arms race situation, or do you think they were completely independent of each other?
No, I think he pretty much just had a change of heart. From all accounts, when he talked to Dallas last Thursday, Dallas kind of pressured him. They're like, hey, well, if you think you're going to come with us, we need you to kind of tell people or agree to it on Friday, this past Friday. So that way, it can kind of shape up the rest of free agency. We can kind of, see where the chips fall from there. And so he felt like he was kind of pressured into deciding a week ago. And this past Monday, he calls up Blake Griffin. He goes, hey, I think I kind of want to renege and go back to the Clippers. I feel like they pressured me into this. I'm not 100% okay with it. And Blake Griffin relayed that information back to the Clippers organization, and from there, the great emoji war happened.
Banana boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my dog. We can ignore the dog. This is gonna be a regular segment on.
Is when my dog barks at the door.
It's like Kiwi's Playhouse in here.
All right. So yeah, I think he was gonna go back to the Clippers regardless. I don't think LaMarcus had anything to do with it.
All right, but going into next season, true or false? There's only three teams in the Western Conference that can get to the finals: the Spurs, the Clippers, the defending champion Warriors.
Yeah. When the DeAndre move thing happened, I kind of written the Clippers off. I think I still might. With Lance Stephenson and Paul Pierce, and maybe this whole thing does kind of bring the Clippers together as a unit stronger. If I were to pick three from the West, I would have probably gone with the Spurs, Warriors. OKC's got that great core, but I kind of like what Memphis is doing. Memphis didn't have a huge free agent acquisition, but they did acquire Matt Barnes from the Clippers.
Yeah.
And so they're a team.
I think he is kind of like a significant. You know, Memphis sounds like a really. That sounds almost exactly like a Matt Barnes team.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Blue collar.
That was kind of the jokes everybody's saying. They're like, well, Memphis is just going to roll the ball out and punch everybody in the face.
First team all defense. I'm sorry, I thought this was basketball.
There's teams, a team like Houston is not built. Like, Houston is basically a C-plus version of the Warriors.
Right.
A lot of iso ball. Not deep enough, not dynamic enough.
Houston's what I call, I affectionately called last year a fool's gold team, and everybody gave me crap for them. They're going to win a bunch of games.
You're right. Dallas,
it's not going to mean
anything. Think about it. The Mavericks are kind of like perennially competing for that 6 or 7 seed.
Just like Dallas.
The Thunder, it feels like that window's closed. Is there anything left for the Oklahoma City Thunder?
What remains to be seen with the Thunder, Portland today actually signed Enes Kanter to an offer sheet of $70 million, and the Thunder is going to want to match it, but they may not want to match it at that high a price. And so, if they don't have a big man in Enes Kanter, then they're pretty much done.
See, I don't know. I feel like we've forgotten, because he was out so long. We've forgotten about Durant. Durant's a transcendent player.
I don't think we've forgotten about him so much as we've it's a team with a new coach. Like Brooks is gone, so. Yeah. We don't know. All right, have they hired a new coach yet?
Yeah, Billy Donovan from Florida.
Okay. So, I don't know. I think talent-wise, they're not a question mark, but you know what you could expect from them even when they're healthy. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the same group, the same core of players that took them just before the finals, right before they lost James Harden, and I don't see them getting that much further than that. Mm. Even with Durant.
I don't know. Westbrook went crazy last year, just trying to catch up. And Westbrook and Durant are both hidden. I think they at least deserve to be in the discussion.
What is interesting about the whole fiasco with the Mavericks and the Clippers, Rajon Rondo last year was a disaster for the Mavericks. And this is the situation the Mavericks are in now. So they lost DeAndre Jordan. They don't have a center. They don't have a point guard. They pretty much have to tank because their first round pick next year belongs to the Celtics, unless that pick is a top seven pick. So they've got to be awful next year if they want to keep their draft pick.
You think they're just going to pay Nowitzki not to play?
Well, he took a pay cut. And so, yeah, I mean, that's not an option for the Mavs. The Mavs have stuff, and the Mavs are kind of good, and the Mavs are probably going to be in the playoffs. But again, the Mavs, we're not going to be talking about them after the first round.
Oh, yeah.
And so, again, we should probably just put this on wax, on blast right now. Who is going to win the Western Conference based on what we've seen out of free agency, based on what we know we have in the tank? Who is going to win the Western Conference next year?
Spurs. I still say Warriors. I think it's easy to like this, what the moves the Spurs have done, and I like them. But I think people do forget that as well as Tim Duncan has played, he is going to be a year older, and that, you know, that tends to not really matter because he always transcends his age. Tony Parker didn't play very well last year.
I think somebody wrote, a Deadspin writer had a great line. He goes, Tony Parker has been playing like a wounded bird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you this. Okay, so the situation with the San Antonio Spurs, right? Do they need Manu, Tony, and Tim to be the big three for them to get to the finals? Or can they be a dominant team with the new big three, with Kawhi Leonard, with Danny Green, and, of course, LaMarcus Aldridge?
Yeah, they can. I think if they can manage the old big three to supplement the new big three, then there's a way. Like, it's
then they're the friendly six.
Yeah,
it's a weird moral comment. Yeah.
The friendly six are just like six
that sounds
guys.
Like a really bad sex move or something. The friendly six.
I tell you what, I'm going to say this right now. I think next year's going to be a pretty special year for Clippers Nation. So everybody get excited. And I'm going to say this is I'm just going to say this one time really quick. I am a Los Angeles Clippers fan, so you take that with a grain of salt. But also, I'm starting a we're called Austin Clippers, and we're going to gather. We're going to watch all the Clippers games in Austin because I think that Austin is the biggest city in the country without a professional basketball team or sports team of any kind.
Of course, it has it. They're called the Spurs.
Yeah,
they're called the Longhorns.
Yeah,
and San Antonio is a horrible place.
It is a desolate wasteland,
full of miserable people.
JJ Redick lives here. Everybody.
JJ Redick lives here.
Everybody found out yesterday during the whole emoji war.
What the fuck? Blake Griffin's really? From Texas. So this is Clippers country. You guys are riding in Clippers country, and we're going to show out next year. We got
Blake Griffin
stuff.
Went to Oklahoma. That we can't have that.
Do we all have to drive Kias now?
We're all going to get Clippers stuff. We're going to take a pilgrimage to Los Angeles. Get excited!
I'm a DeAndre Jordan fan.
I was like,
so
exactly. I mean,
we got. I mean, you guys on Facebook, facebook.com/. Austin Clippers.
You've already got an uphill battle. LaMarcus Aldridge went to UT.
Exactly.
So you.
Oh, he's done. Spurs.
As one ambiguous black guy, I gotta support Blake Griffin.
Exactly.
African must rise.
This upcoming year is really the first year where I have kind of written off the Clippers. I still like them a lot, but the last 2 years I've been like, now these guys are coming out of the West, and both years I've been wrong, obviously. But I've been really high on the Clippers, and I do like DeAndre Jordan a lot.
But you're in.
Yeah, yeah.
Clippers. I mean, Clipper City.
Clippers are a team that if they won, I'd be fucking ecstatic because they're interesting to watch.
They're interesting to watch, exactly. They're bold, they're flavorful, they're robust.
They're not a hot dog pizza.
They're not a hot dog pizza.
Are we still talking about basketball?
Basketball. And I guess the big thing is they're representative of our values as a progressive city.
Mm.
And also, like, they don't have any history, so we're not like co-opting anything that doesn't exist. Like,
that's a good
just,
point.
They're just the Clippers. What is a Clipper? Nobody knows.
It was like a ship.
It's an old wooden ship that they used in the Civil War time. No,
that was a barber city.
No, it's like a sailing thing. It's like a sailing thing. You put a Clipper there or something. But anyway, I'm a diehard fan. So all right, so NBA free agency.
Well, and then since I am in the show, I do have to talk about the Cavs a little bit.
Let's talk about the Cavs.
They, for the most part, brought their entire team back.
LeBron held them hostage.
Yeah. They haven't signed J.R. Smith yet. I don't know if they will or not because they signed Mo Williams from Charlotte. Mo Williams had a pretty good year last year. He's played with Cleveland before. He actually pairs really nicely with LeBron. They've played together in the past.
He sounds like a wine.
Like salmon and white wine.
He's a nice vintage. Now, back in 2007, he wasn't quite mature yet.
What's going to be interesting, though, in the East next year is the Miami Heat have gotten a lot better. They drafted my favorite player in the draft. He's not going to win Rookie of the Year, but he's still my favorite player in the draft. Justice Winslow somehow fell to them at 10.
Son of Carl Winslow.
Yeah, he's going to be an amazing player for them coming off the bench.
Who was ironically, he did work for the police department, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. and they signed Gerald Green from Phoenix. They've still got Goran Dragic coming back. They've got, I mean, their season was derailed last year with Chris Bosh having...
being Chris Bosh.
Well, it seemed blood like Chris, clots in his lungs.
Like, it seemed it seemed like Chris, while Chris Bosh was out, Wade was healthy, and then vice versa.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, so the Miami Heat are going to be really good this year, and mostly because everybody in the East has gotten a little bit worse. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think...
Wait, how could the East have gotten any worse?
Yeah, it did.
Brooklyn became a second team.
Well, also what happened, Paul Pierce left the Wizards, and the Wizards are still kind of like a team of, like, just kind of youth that don't really have a leader. John Wall kind of is one, mm-hmm. but... there's no real challenger in the East. The Bulls can kind of like, maybe they can kind of put something together.
I think they can play with the Cavs, but
yeah.
We're gonna get a good Bulls Heat 4-5 series, and it'll go 7. It'll be a lot of fun, and then it won't matter.
Right.
The grand scheme of anything. All right.
Lakers and Knicks will still be really bad.
Can we talk real quick about how bad of a GM Michael Jordan is?
I don't think we need to.
Okay.
I think the man's been through enough.
Well, and the thing I want to make sure, like, I feel like one of the bigger things that came out of free agency, which is when most of the players are actually going either after the money or the championships, I don't think any player showed it more what he was actually going after than David West.
Yeah.
Like, the man threw $11 million out the window specifically just so he could go try to win a championship.
I think that's interesting. And JC, you said something similar to the effect on Twitter. Why are all of the white people not complaining about the Spurs getting all of these, like, building the super team of people chasing championships?
Yeah, I mean, the Spurs for the last couple of years kind of spouted the built, not bought thing when they, I mean, this summer they had to buy LaMarcus Aldridge. They had to buy Kawhi's loyalty. I'm not saying I have a problem with it. I'm saying that every team
Danny
does
Green
it.
Was pretty expensive.
Yeah, Danny Green was $40 million. And I'm not saying I have a problem with it. I have a problem with the perception that all the things the Spurs do is noble when they play the game the same as everyone else does.
It's a marketing technique. They're a small market team.
Right.
And the way San Antonio thinks of itself is, we go to work, not like L.A. They are out there in the movies.
Yeah.
So it's like, they got to sell themselves to that audience.
And it's even David West 9 months ago was quoted about how cheap he thinks ring chasing is and how he's never going to do that. And here he is.
It's weird because he's doing exactly like it can't even be hidden that that's what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between what he did and what Karl Malone did when he went to the Lakers.
Karl Malone did about the same thing. He gave up about the same amount of money.
You know, it's interesting. Like, would you rather have $1 million or an NBA ring?
$1 million.
No, I'd rather have $11 million.
Yeah. I can buy a
ring. I'll go play for the Hornets for 10 years, man. I'm just trying to get paid.
Well, and I think the sad part is like, yeah, you know what. Here's what I think about it. It's not necessarily... I think the perception is not necessarily the fact that you're ring chasing. You kind of wonder the atmosphere between one club and another, mm-hmm. It does seem like the... And maybe it's only because I live close to San Antonio that I get exposed to the San Antonio...
SeaWorld, Fiesta Texas.
Exactly. Riverwalk. Fuck SeaWorld. But... you get exposed to... I don't know. There does seem to be like very much a camaraderie with San Antonio that you don't, and it's not. It may just be because I don't live in another city. I don't see how other teams interact, but it feels like there is like a family atmosphere with San Antonio.
Absolutely.
That it does feel like it draws players to want to join that kind of an atmosphere.
Yeah. No state tax. nice big mansion.
Like it's a nice place to live.
I understand.
Like, you're an hour driving distance from a really awesome city, but. I mean, in terms of where it is you want to work, it may not necessarily be that you're chasing a championship, even though I don't doubt that that's exactly what he's doing. But maybe playing for somebody like Greg Popovich and playing around players like Tim Duncan and Ginobili can be more fun to go to. Absolutely. Versus going to Indiana.
Well, you know, we can relate this to Geeky Pursuits. It's like how Steve Soderbergh can make anybody look like a good actor. He made Jennifer Lopez look like a good actor.
C-tates.
So it's like, if you wanna, you know, up your craft, you go be in a few of his movies. So it's sort of the same thing. It's like, it's your professional development will come along faster.
Yeah, no, totally. I think it's a great thing. I honestly have no problem with that. Again, it's what JC said. It's the idea that like people want to throw beer bottles at LeBron James because he went to Miami.
Yeah.
And somehow what San Antonio does is, which is the exact same thing, it's perceived as this kind of noble pursuit. It smells a little like fish. And we all know that fish is—it smells fishy. It's weird, man. I don't like it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. The other thing about that Spurs pedigree is
inside the locker, fish.
It smells
like fish.
Yeah. That Spurs pedigree creates things like Corey Joseph going to the Toronto Raptors for $30 million. That is bullshit.
Tell me how you really feel.
Career 5 points, 2 assists, Jesus. 12 minutes, $30 million.
I have more than that.
Yeah, I can get that by accident. Just toss me the ball, and I'll just sink one.
Yeah, Gary Neal got one of those contracts after the Spurs won a championship, and then Corey's like, that's dumb.
Well, it would have been dumb if Dellavedova got, like, $40 million from some team.
Oh, he hasn't signed his contract yet. You'll wait and see.
All right, guys, we have to move on. I want to talk a little bit. You know, like, every week we're going to have kind of like a quirky story that kind of makes you feel good inside. You know, makes you want to kind of sit down and crack open some milk and just kind of feel good. And this week's feel good story comes to us courtesy of a guy that we don't associate with feeling good. He's kind of a hard ass.
Kind of a crazy person.
Jim Harbaugh. JC, what's this about?
So when Jim Harbaugh was a coach at Stanford, he recruited a player named Trent Murphy. And so Trent Murphy at the time, living with his parents, obviously, Jim Harbaugh comes for his visit, trying to recruit him to come to Stanford. Trent's mom was pregnant at the time, very close to giving birth to their new son. While in the middle of the visit, his mom goes into labor. It's an emergency situation. They don't have a babysitter, so Jim Harbaugh says, "Well, I'll stay with little Connor here."
I was trying to say Jim Harbaugh was like, "Okay, guys, I got this.
We're gonna run a play from this end to this end."
So Jim Harbaugh stuck around and hung out with Connor Murphy, who was 8 years old at the time. They played chess, they drank milk, they watched TV, and now here it is.
Did some shots.
Did they have a montage?
I don't know. But now here it is, some years later, Jim Harbaugh's the coach at Michigan, and now he's trying to recruit Connor Murphy to play for Michigan.
What's going to be funny if in 10 years he's recruiting the baby that was born? It's like, I'm the fucking reason you came out.
That did make me feel something. That's beautiful. Yeah.
And it's kind of a good feel-good story because Jim Harbaugh is kind of a crazy person.
All right, guys, so that concludes our headlines. I want to talk a little because, like, I do feel, you know, we all remember Brian, who was from here. This is the last time we're going to say his name. Brian.
Who?
Brian was a live wire, right? He would interject funny voices and great references. And how am I doing? I'm actually a little... I'm nervous.
You're chill.
You're bringing a nice, chill energy to
it. I feel like he runs a no-huddle offense, and I'm just kind of sitting here calling plays on the sideline and leisurely walking, grinding down the clock. I think we need to up the tempo a little bit. I think that's on me.
The major thing is control. Like, do you have control? You're in control.
I think we're feeling it.
It's the doldrums of summer. There's not a lot of major sports news to begin with, and so, yeah.
And we're going to circle back to that.
Each other out.
We're going to circle back to that in just one second.
We're now, feeling what?
Because it is a slower season, and because we don't necessarily have all that much to talk about in terms of sports, although we do have quite a bit, but you're right. The headliner sports, the meat and potatoes, red meat of America, off right now. We have a special guest with us tonight. You know him.
He's now, very excited.
We don't he know is. Him.
It's Mr. Kevin Morris, who is the esports editor at the Daily Dot. So he's also my coworker. But what he does is actually he sits on the frontier of the future of sports, and ushers in a new era. So Kevin, thanks for being here on Inside the Locker. We're going to try and have a guest for you every week. This week it's Kevin Morris, editor of the esports section at the Daily Dot. What is esports?
Can
Can you first just read the taglines I gave you?
Yeah.
Just to see how the other guys think of this.
So Kevin...
Because I was just sitting here and I just thought I had some ideas that you guys might like.
This is pretty good. Inside the locker, Jock Free Sports. That's pretty good.
Inaccurate, though, I guess now.
I guess it's inaccurate.
Yeah, not Jock anymore.
You guys ruined it.
Inside the locker, all the sports... None of the jocks.
It's also ruined.
Band Geek Sports? Is that?
No.
That's
not bad. I like where your head was at.
Okay, you don't have to give me a
second. Inside the locker, right. Nerds talk sports. It's pretty good.
To the point.
And this one may be a play on that one, but just as direct. Inside the locker, sports for nerds.
It's okay. Two on the nose.
I like jock free. I like all the sports, none of the jocks.
Because jock, the association with jock isn't necessarily that you play sports. It's that you're kind of a bad person.
I got a modification. all the sports flavor half the jocks. Diet sports.
Let's add some alliteration.
Diet sports. Diet sports. Sports zero.
Let's go with some combo rhyming alliteration. Inside the locker. Geek speak sports.
Oh, I like that.
I think that's good.
Geek speak
sports.
Yeah,
there you go. Okay. I'm gonna bungle that a little bit, but that's pretty good.
Someone write that down for Chris.
It's not like we're recording this.
All right. So, Kevin Morris, you're the editor of the esports section at the Daily Dot. This is actually a pretty BFD. What esports is, followed by millions, beloved by. Millions. But a lot of people also don't know what it is, and most of those people tend to be over 30 years old. So, for old guys like us, Kevin, what is esports?
I mean, esports are sports. They're just people doing something. They're playing a game competitively. That's what sports are.
So, video games that are played competitively. What are some of the leading video games that people compete in? And is there money in this? Is it just a bunch of kids in their mom's basement? What is this?
There's a lot of money in it. Dota 2 is one of the big ones. It's not the biggest, but it's got the biggest prize pool. And the money in that one, I think, for the biggest tournament in Dota 2, it's coming up in August, the prize pool is $15 million.
Holy fuck.
That's
more than Jason Pierre-Paul's ninth finger mix.
it's a lot of, now, a I mean, lot you of could, money.
Yeah. Aren't esports really big in South Korea? Isn't that the...
Esports are really big in South Korea. They're really big in China. But they're also really big in the U.S., you know, and Europe, too.
And I was going to ask, because, you know, I'm not going to bullshit. Like, I know you, and I know who you are. But I think this is really interesting, because you are a former professor of journalism... A very serious
adjunct professor.
You're
still a fucking professor.
Study the craft. Your work has appeared in many respected, I'd say respected publications.
He said question.
I mean ABC. No.
But again, how did you get? And how does a real journalist get into video games?
That's like an impossible question to answer because I don't even remember. But I mean, I certainly played video games a lot. I played Halo a lot. Halo 2 especially. I thought I was pretty competitive in it. So I totally get esports. I played video games a lot when I was a kid. It's more like. As a reporter, it was this thing that I just couldn't ignore. It was just this thing I kind of found out about. And once I found out about it, I was like, you know, this is way too big and way too important to not be covered seriously by journalists. And so there you go.
Absolutely.
And that's how we started. I kind of forced the Daily Dot to start covering esports.
And this is another thing that's important to know. What you do is you take these kids, and oftentimes teenagers... who are just insanely committed to video games, and you basically push them into being reporters and into covering this. No one's really doing that. Who are your competitors? Who are the other respected esports publications? I think ESPN does some stuff. Who's doing this stuff?
Nobody really. I mean, there's a few, like, there's...
Thank fucking God.
I mean, they're like, you know, there's the only other site that does it is The Score, but they're more of a platform for their app. They're like a, like, they do, The Score does, like, a, it's like a sports app, right? Like,
yeah.
You've probably heard of The Score. They do sports, and it's all about their scores and shit like that. Journalism is kind of the content marketing for the app. So the journalism isn't super important, but I would say just to emphasize the teenage thing. We do have teenagers, but esports has been around forever. So we also have this guy Richard Lewis, who is this like in you know I worked at the ABC investigative unit in New York for a summer. I met a lot of investigative journalists. This guy is like the best pure investigative reporter I've ever known, and he just focuses on esports. So there's like this whole world that people don't know about, and there's a lot of talent, a lot of journalists.
Like, this sounds interesting. Like, I guess when you're trying to dig deep into a story regarding esports, exactly what give an example, I guess, of a
scoop
of a yeah, I guess of what, are you is it focusing more on the people who play, or focusing more on the games in which they're playing?
It's everything. I mean, you have the same thing as in traditional sports. You got player transfers. Player transfers are huge. You know, if you can get a scoop on that, and we dominate that. Most of the biggest player transfers are reported at Dot Esports first. But then there's also like there's huge scandals, match fixing. You know?
Whoa.
What? Yeah, like match fixing and gambling and shit like that.
Wasn't there like Adderall, like people were taking or something?
People take drugs, yeah. People take amphetamines and shit to focus.
Wow, so even esports has PEDs.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's not a sport unless you can cheat at it.
And I can gamble on it?
You can gamble on it.
You're getting the trifecta now.
And you can get the players to throw games for you, you know? So there you go. I mean, it's much more gambler-friendly.
It's like, sure, we're back to 1940s boxing.
Well, and I'm glad you missed it. So, an interesting kind of bridge there, Adam. You know, where is this stuff going? You're right. It's been around for a long time, but there's also a huge connected subset of young people that are just really into what esports is, into these games. What's the future of that look like?
That's really hard to answer. I have no idea. All I can say is it's going to be huge because everybody plays video games. Video games are getting more and more realistic. They're getting better and better. You know, it's just this constant thing that's changing and evolving, getting better every year, more addictive. Everybody plays games. Everybody's going to be able to follow esports. It's going to be its own separate phenomenon that's going to be huge. It'll be different from sports, but it'll be, I think, of comparable size at some point. I don't know when.
I'm actually really curious how the influx of and the growth of popularity of virtual reality and augmented reality is going to affect esports, and I think that could be really interesting in the next few years.
It could be interesting. It's just hard to say because it doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
So I mean, who knows? It could be another frontier for the industry.
Yeah.
It's such a young industry that everything's a new frontier in a lot of ways.
It is. I mean, you know, when our dads were little, they liked the new Chevys, they liked boxing, they liked baseball. And now those are way low on the totem pole. In 20, 30 years, football will be considerably less popular because it might not exist and people won't be allowed to play it. Soccer.
Yeah, players may have like a 5-year career span.
Yeah.
If they're
lucky. And then I mean, you're right. The video game continues to evolve. It is so interesting. It's so fascinating. Now, Kevin Morris, where can people find the work of you and the work of your team? Your work and your
energy. Just search Daily Dot and Esports. Google that, and you will find it.
Daily Dot Esports. Kevin Morris, Daily Dot. We're so blessed that you could be with us on this treasured evening. It's a real gift.
I gotta say, I'm not being sarcastic. You've sold me. I'm gonna watch a little bit of esports. Just give it a shot.
Awesome.
It's I've really never fun. Done that. It's really interesting. It's really fun, and you know, it's
you know, and it's not just we have our printed our printed work, which is really the bread and butter, and that really drives the conversation. But also, the Daily Dot has a full studio that turns out, you know, sports center type of work, you know, like, you know, long round the clock kind of talk. And so there's a future in that too. All right. I think half of the panel is kind of giving me the eye, like, dude, let's talk about some real shit.
I'll go back to my corner.
But Kevin,
thank you, Kevin.
Thank you for being here. All right, shit. Last question. I promise you, this is the absolute. This is the last esports question. So you want to get into this kind of thing? What's the next, like Elliot mentioned? What's the next thing to watch? What's the next event? What's the next like must see TV that you gotta?
Oh man, that is really hard to answer.
The international's coming up.
I wouldn't say the internet, but if you want to get into esports and you're like casual, like a lot of these games are really hard to understand, I say just watch the fighting games and the biggest fighting game tournament in the world, like Street Fighter 4, and like, you know, that's coming up later this month in July. It's called EVO. It's going to be in Las Vegas. You just
got it.
I think it's 2 weekends from now. I don't have the dates in front of me, but it's coming up. Fighting games are really fun to watch competitively because everybody understands them. It's just cartoon characters beating the shit out of each other. So there you go.
If you pay attention, well, if you follow .esports, you'll find out about it. But also, if you pay attention to twitch.tv, then you'll be able to figure out when things are happening.
You know, I'm kind of curious. I have one question. So the players, the prominent players, I guess, in esports, is it similar to sports in that you find players who are very, very good at very specific games? Or is it kind of like, do you have a LeBron James, if you will, somebody who is versatile?
Like a Bo Jackson.
There you go, thank you. Like somebody who's so versatile good at multiple things that he actually kind of dominates or is competitive in multiple and various games that would be somebody exciting to watch.
You have a Michael Jordan.
Almost like a person you can follow and sort of track you through multiple sort of avenues, if you will.
I think it's pretty comparable to traditional sports. You really don't have players transitioning from one game to another very often. Oh. And the one who does is pretty rare.
So the future of esports is the first Bo Jackson.
So, well, it's kind of like Tony Hawk. Like, Tony Hawk spent all his life mastering one thing, and it's really all he can do.
Yeah.
If you focus, then that's kind of where it's going.
Yeah. So you're saying, like, esports is just sort of... It's not so much as its own thing on par with like hockey or basketball. It's its own sphere, and they have specific sports inside that esports category.
Yes.
So if I want to watch StarCraft, a good StarCraft player is not going to go play Dota, and not go play a fighting game.
I mean, they could, and they have, but they're not
dominant, I guess.
Yeah, they're it's going to be different. I mean, they spent their whole young life training for StarCraft, and then they're going into a different game.
Yeah.
It's rare to find one that can be dominant in two separate disciplines, or multiple.
Well, the thing about I've watched a little bit of esports, and I think about it because I watch a lot of Let's Plays. And the thing that is depressing when you watch these fighting tournaments is how good they are, and you realize how much you suck. You're like, wow, I'm pretty bad. They are really like they can beat people in like 10 seconds.
I mean, you don't feel that way watching like actual sports.
Well, I have no chance in actual sports. So there's no comparison.
I guess that's... You know what? That's the interesting thing about it is... It's... For esports, it's something where it's almost like... Nobody can be excluded from it, kind of thing. If you have money to dish out for the game, you can participate and play in the game. You can play football, but you still need other people to play with you. And you'll know pretty quickly how quickly you suck.
Yeah.
You know? Or you just like... Tell me about it.
Or if you just like athletically, like I remember I was 9 and I used to practice basketball every day before school and after school. And my dad came out one day, I got a C in a class. He's like, Elliot, you're not going to get that tall. Just stop playing basketball. So it's like, he's like, Elliot, there's one Muggsy Bogues and it's not going to be you. So it's like, but with video games, it's like, well, you can't say that. So it's actually a sort of more encouraging thing. You can see, like, are there, like, disabled people who play esports?
Yeah. I mean, there is... I can't remember specifically. There's some dude that doesn't even have... I mean, I know that this is not exactly what you mean, but there's this one guy that doesn't... I think he can't even use his hands, and he plays Counter-Strike.
That's pretty freaking impressive.
That's kind of amazing. Yeah.
That's a disability.
That's a Twitch game.
Yep. I think it's mostly with his eyes and stuff.
Wow.
Maybe I'm totally wrong.
I'd have to check. I think that's the game.
In any case, yeah, it's interesting. It's a level playing field. It the barrier to entry is lower. And, you know, if you're 12 years old playing this online, crazy to fall into that hive. I think it's really exciting. And again, Kevin, just we're just blessed and happy that you joined us in the tree of trust. We're just very very thankful. All right, moving on. Kind of an exciting, you know, we talked about boxing a little bit. It's been kind of quietly a summer of boxing. We had the big Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. We have two big boxing movies on the horizon. The trailers are kind of circulating YouTube, social media. Creed, basically Rocky VI, the continuation of the Rocky series, starring Michael B. Jordan as Apollo Creed's son. And Southpaw, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Rachel McAdams, and probably some other people in there. Probably. Presumably there's some other people.
Forrest Whitaker. Forrest Whitaker. Does Creed star Scott Stapp?
Does not. No. Oh, no, okay, that right. He has left Creed. He's no longer in Creed. it's actually a really tragic situation.
Really?
We shouldn't make fun of...
okay.
He's addicted. Oh. He's divorced. He's like... No, it was interesting. The singer Creed, Scott Stapp, posted a video of him in a hotel room, like in a motel, saying that he was broke and saying that he was homeless and saying that he only had like $200 to his name, and he was like, you know, strung out on drugs. So it's a sad situation.
Okay,
but also, you know, Creed, I think they get a lot of unfair. You know, I'm a music nerd. I guess we're all nerdy about things. For me, it's probably music. I think Creed is not that bad of a band. I think there's way worse bands than Creed.
Nickelback, you take that back.
I mean
you take that nickel back,
you know.
Like, it done.
Like, I think, like, Creed never pretended to be anything it wasn't. It's just four guys from the South kind of like playing some penis music, you know, just like, hey man, I was thinking about my penis, you know, just like, it didn't hurt anybody, you know. I think what's a lot more damaging is like
the penis or the music.
It's just like Mumford & Sons, what they do is a lot more dishonest and a lot more, you know, it co-ops a lot more. I think something like Iggy Azalea is a lot more poisonous. A discussion for another day. Hey, here's what we're going to talk about. Boxing. Two exciting boxing movies. What I'm going to do is we're going to go around. I'm going to say, which of these two movies are you most excited to see? And what are your two favorite boxing movies ever? You guys are some serious... movie nerd, so no Rocky movies are allowed. I suppose they're...
That's a good rule.
Yeah, no Rocky movies.
Yeah, that's too easy.
No,
that's
Rocky
not
fair. Movies.
Alright, fuck
it. If you have to resort to a Rocky movie, that's okay. So, I'm gonna ask you that. What I'm gonna do is there's...
Okay, you know what? Let's split it. Okay. Your favorite Rocky movie and then your favorite two non-Rocky movies. How's that?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Alright. So that way, if you have no other non-Rocky movies, then at least name your favorite of the Rockies.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice exercise that can really spurn a frank and honest discussion on social media channels such as Twitter. We'll start with... I want to close with Adam because Adam has the most exciting film collection I've ever seen. We're going to start with Logan.
Least impressive movie collection I've ever seen.
We'll go around the room. Actually, that's unfair. I probably have least impressive collection.
So I watched Rocky IV the other day, and I drank a 40 along with it, and that was pretty cool.
Well, because America.
Yeah
because America.
Yeah, absolutely. That's about all I got.
I mean, Rocky IV is easily the most patriotic... It's probably the most patriotic sports movie.
I really wish
he beats Russia.
Started with me.
Yeah, I mean, Miracle's got to be up there, but yeah.
It's
right. Elliot?
Favorite Rocky movie? Got to be Rocky Balboa. I really like the message it was sending, and I like that the ending didn't cop out.
I'm with you there.
My favorite two boxing movies that aren't Rocky, so they're a bit of curveballs. One's sort of a curveball, one's a large curveball. The one that's sort of a curveball is Million Dollar Baby. I love that movie.
Okay.
The part...
That's not really a curveball, though.
Okay. Well, the scene where Morgan Freeman, and he's like sort of silhouetted and dark, mm-hmm. and he takes down that young guy that just was messing with everybody.
Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, that's amazing. That was Anthony Mackie.
Yeah.
My God, you're right. And then the other one I love is Real Steel.
You know what? I wouldn't have even thought about that.
Can I also say one of my other favorite boxing movies is Snatch.
Hey, yeah, that qualifies. Bare knuckle qualifies.
Yeah.
Bare knuckle boxing. It was central to the plot. Brad.
It's also extremely corrupt. So
does
Fight
Club qualify then? I guess.
No.
Okay.
I've just decided.
No, because JC. You could technically Fight Club is not necessarily just with your fists, although they do show just that. So,
JC, where are you at?
besides any Rocky film, well, my favorite Rocky, I'd probably go with the four Rocky Balboa. But probably my favorite boxing movie of all time. I watch it every now and then just because it's such a really funny and highly underrated, highly underseen movie, The Great White Hype.
Yeah.
It's super funny.
I agree with you.
As a white man, yes.
Yeah. Still relevant today as far as like the corruption in the sport, how much of a piece of shit Don King was, and boxing promoters in general kind of still are. Portrays Vegas in a really funny light.
I do think that movie gets not enough credit is given to it, because I think it's seen as an over-the-top screwball, but I think it mixes satire and screwball really well.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of stuff in it that's very honest, and it's very honestly funny.
Oh, yeah.
And there's stuff that's also just very over the top.
Yeah.
But it, I guess that kind of comedy ilk, it is sort of a one of a kind, and I don't think it really does get enough credit about being about really being a good movie.
Yeah. A fantastic soundtrack too. Like if you're really into like 90s hip hop like I am, pretty much all that soundtrack is amazing. I got a lot of play out of that soundtrack when I was in high school.
Which artists are in there?
A bunch of nobody is like super relevant now. Like this one artist did a cover of that Annie Lennox song. One of these.
You really drove us into a dead end here, Elliot.
Yeah. Sorry, come on. I'm just thinking like Montel Jordan.
Sweet Dreams. Yeah, thank you. Sweet Dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
You're thinking Montel. That's your go-to 90s hip hop.
Goddamn right, it is.
Is Montel
Jordan. The party's here on the West Side.
Okay, yeah. If you look at the soundtrack, you probably won't recognize any of the names, but you can get it from iTunes. It's amazing.
Is Massive Headwind on there?
I don't think so.
Oh damn. It. Okay.
Oh yeah,
that's Peter Berg's band's name.
Yeah, look, Roxy movies. I enjoyed. I liked The Fighter. I liked Cinderella Man. I liked. Raging Bull. Can we get a little Raging Bull? Yeah. Come on, guys. Come on.
If somebody was gonna say it, I was gonna have to say.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a pretentious thing about it. Sure.
I love that you called me out on that. That's great. But yeah, how about the Rocky VI? Kind of good. I don't know if it was good. I just kind of like, you know, fall 2006 it came out. You know, he like does his thing. He's like owning an Italian restaurant. It was like emotive. I enjoyed Rocky VI. I didn't think it was.
Is the new Apollo Creed, you know, son movie, is that going to be good?
The trailer looks fantastic.
It does. Yeah. It looks really good.
I
have high hopes for it, but I want to know.
It seems very much in the vein of Rocky Balboa in that. From concept, it didn't seem like a very good concept. And even if you go back and watch the trailers for Rocky Balboa, and you're seeing the SportsCenter clip of like a digital rendition of like what would it look like if Rocky fought today's number one heavyweight, and that's like that's stupid. But the movie turned out really great, and Michael B. Jordan is a fantastic actor. The trailer sets the tone perfectly in how serious it takes the franchise, because like there's. Rocky's talking to Apollo Creed's son. He's telling him about his father, and you know, Creed even references. He's like, "Oh, I heard you and my dad had a third fight that nobody saw." And it's like that's
end of Rocky
cool
3 kind of.
Yeah,
gets
that's such a cool moment in the franchise, and like, to put that in the trailer, like I thought was really really good. It looks amazing.
You see, like Creed sort of reminds me of a little bit of this is going to sound weird, but X-Men: Days of Future Past, because X-Men: Days of Future Past came in a race to X-Men 3, and it feels like with Rocky Balboa and Creed, they're trying to be like, look. Don't worry about 3. Don't worry about 5. We're going to give you 2 to replace those that were just clown shoes.
You just have to not pretend 5 didn't happen.
Yeah.
I think most people have.
Yeah.
Except for Tommy Morrison.
Yeah.
The only one who was actually a robot.
Well, he's dead now, so it's fine.
Tommy Morrison die?
I think so.
What?
I have to look this
really?
We can't, we can't just say that on the show.
Tommy Gunn is dead?
Unless we know that. All right, Adam.
He had AIDS. Then
full blown.
He was mistakenly diagnosed with AIDS
in the movie.
No, in real life.
Whoa!
Like Tommy Morrison was an actual boxer. He was a heavyweight champion. Beat George Foreman, as a matter of fact.
He is dead. He died 2 years ago.
Oh wow. Oof. Okay. All right. Well, I guess it wasn't due to AIDS. He didn't get the Magic Johnson AIDS.
All right, Adam. Let's. This is a family show. Adam, take us home.
For the record, we're all laughing at the uncomfortable how uncomfortable Ramon is.
So I think you all actually hit pretty much the big ones. My favorite Rocky movie, the one I think I do rewatch the most, is probably Rocky II. And I think it's great. You know, I have a strange nostalgia for me being a child of the 80s. Like, I wasn't a teenager of the 80s, but I was an HBO child of the 80s. Mm. So I have a strong affection for a lot of inferior sequels. because they were played on HBO like constantly, so it's what I grew up with. Like, I didn't know originals. I didn't know the first films in series until I became more of a film aficionado. But I saw Ghostbusters 2 well before and far more times than I saw Ghostbusters 1. Same thing with Gremlins. Same thing with Temple of Doom. Same thing with the Rocky films. Like, all these inferior sequels that were spawned on from really great original movies were the movies that I have the biggest fondness for, because mm-hmm. I saw them so many times when I was a kid. And Rocky II, I think, has the first real, true... It's like the first introduction to the Rocky montage. Like, it's the premier Rocky montage to me.
And so, it's the one because he can't read. Remember, it's like discovered
that right,
he can't
read. Right, like the montage happens. The montage happens right after he, you know, Adrian gives birth to their son, and she and Rocky's kind of on the, you know, he's not feeling the whole training thing, and he's like, he's gonna fight, but he doesn't really feel like he's gonna actually compete, kind of thing. And then she comes out of the coma, and then it's that big moment of like, go and win. Like, I want you to win. And now he's like invigorated and. Like, it's the movie that makes you want to get up and actually start working out and then realize that you suck at it, kind of thing.
but what is your favorite boxing movie?
So, my favorite boxing movie, and it would sound pretentious to say Raging Bull, so I'm not going to say Raging Bull. But there's actually a movie, and this is probably going to sound more pretentious. I saw it not that long ago. It's a 1940s film. It's a film noir movie called The Setup. It's directed by Robert Wise, who did West Side Story, Sound of Music, actually really a great bunch of action films, bunch of yeah, phenomenal boxing films, and he does actually The Day the Earth Stood Still, the original Day the Earth Stood Still. But anyway, it's actually a film. If you were to take the Bruce Willis Pulp Fiction story, and basically make it its own film. A lot of that is basically what The Setup is.
Where does the gimp come in?
In Pulp Fiction. Okay. So but it's about a boxer who is that kind of like on the outs, older guy, neighborhood boxer kind of thing, and he's being asked to throw a fight, and he's kind of on the ropes, quote unquote, you know, no pun intended, kind of on the ropes of whether or not he's actually going to do it, or if he's going to attempt to use the money. To bet on himself, and you know, run away with the woman he wants to marry, kind of thing. And it all takes place in the it's one of those films that almost takes place almost in real time, kind of like High Noon. So it all takes place in just that one night, and there's a whole lot of drama that just happens. It's a phenomenally compact narrative that's told in a matter. It's like a 70-minute movie, and there's so much that happens in that 70 minutes, and you're with them all the way. It's one of the better older films that I've been exposed to over the course of the past few years. So it's the one that I'm probably the most. It's most immediately on my mind. So
that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I think we should all applaud Adam's bravery in sharing that with us. We're gonna break up into thought groups here, and
we're gonna break it down. No, actually, I think that's just about the end of the show. But one thing we did want to mention, because like, basically, long story short, right, like. It's July, we're all kind of waiting for fantasy football to start, we're all getting stressed out. In the meantime, what are you watching? What are you guys watching? We'll start with Elliot.
Okay. Go
around the circle. Call it a night.
I have a few things. This is something I don't really admit to that often, but it's not something I publicize. I watch a lot of anime, and so like I'm watching...
What?
Yeah, I know, it's weird. I'm watching this one show called Food Wars that is... It's like if Iron Chef and like Pulp Fiction had a baby, and then like some absurd Japanese cinema. It's hilarious and it's awesome.
Iron Chef meets Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, like people eat stuff that's so good on that show that their clothes fly off. It's hilarious.
Basically, the food's made, and then you find out how the food was made.
Yeah.
Like 20 minutes later.
Okay, not like The other thing that I watched, I just finished watching this morning, was True Detective Season 1.
And that, oh, the first one.
So that is the most amazing show I think I've ever watched besides West Wing. Like,
besides the West Wing. I love that.
Oh, yeah. You can't. West Wing.
I enjoy the West Wing, man. You know, you burn through those, you watch those, they're great.
Plus, like, my dad's from South Louisiana. So all those towns, I knew all those towns. It was really cool.
Quick question. Did you anticipate who the killer actually was?
Oh, God, no.
Okay, yeah. I feel like that's actually one of the better...
they did a great job.
They did a great job actually exposing, like, kind of easing you in to who it is.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get that sort of, that atmosphere of feeling like how desperately terrible somebody is. Like, they do a great job of building somebody up, and then at the time in which it's actually exposed who it is, it's like it's kind of like an oh moment, but then like a oh, and then that really is kind of he does a great job when he is finally, you know, to finally find out who it is, of living up to the legend that they've built up until that point, kind of thing.
Okay, so True Detective, it was good. It was damn good. JC, what are you watching, man?
In keeping up with sports, I'm you may not know this, but some of the listeners and these guys know, I'm a huge Cubs fan.
I didn't know that.
And hey, this is the year. Well, not really, because in a thing that is so Cubs, so they're second in the wild card right now.
They're so Cubs.
Yeah, they're second in the wild card right now at 46 wins behind Pittsburgh. That's only because their division is really good. So they have 46 wins. Pittsburgh ahead of them in the division has 50. St. Louis is 56. The other two division leaders, Washington has 46 wins. The Dodgers have 48. That's bullshit. The Cubs? The Cubs should be in the playoffs.
Do you just want Back to the Future 2 to come true?
Maybe. Yeah. And on 4th of July, Chris Bryant hit 2 home runs in Wrigley Field, so that was awesome.
That's fantastic. I'm watching the Gold Cup, which if you're a casual soccer fan, you can go ahead and ignore for a couple weeks. But the end of it should be pretty cool. We should get a really righteous USA-Mexico game. Should be a lot of fun, a lot of positive energy, a lot of good vibes. Very, very good stuff. Well, Logan, what are you watching? Oh, hold on. We have a question.
No, I just want to say, like, Ramon and Logan, y'all are the illustrious new members. And I want to say, like, just to let y'all know a little bit something about Ramon. When we watched the World Cup, I think it was about a year ago, I have never in my life seen somebody more into a game than Ramon was into that game. Like, when they won that, I think it was against, was it Nigeria or?
Cameroon.
Like, and God, that, like, I have a picture of my phone actually of that. Like, you were just, like, excited. It was, like,
and
it was
that's awesome going up in the post.
I appreciate it. I was really drunk. It was, the funny story there is that, like, we did the Inside the Locker show live at the Mohawk down in Austin, Texas. And, I was like, hey, let's get some mariachis. And then I just, like, I hired him. And then and mariachis are, like, $500, man. And so at the end of it, I was
what?
So at the end of it,
They play for free at Mexican restaurants, though.
Well, you gotta give them money.
Yeah, they play.
Are you sure?
If you want to contract mariachis, you don't, like, the show wasn't broadcast live from a Mexican restaurant, so I couldn't just be like, hey, come play a song. We had to bring them here.
But they're all over Austin.
Anyway, so we got mariachi group. We paid them, I mean, that's really it. But I didn't pay them. But I did kind of, like, force the venue into paying.
Wait, you didn't pay? I was like, you didn't pay them?
No, I got them paid. I was prepared to pay them, but I was also like, hey, venue, we got mariachis here. I think it's a good look for the venue. I think you guys should pay for them. They're giving you guys free publicity. We put them on the roof of the Mohawk, and they played for, like, the neighborhood. And it just got people going. So it was a lot of fun. It was a good, you know, very positive, just good experience.
That's the most awesome thing I think I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
The Mohawk in particular is a pretty rad place for a lot of that stuff. So, what was the question?
What are you watching?
What are you watching to get you through pre-football season?
So, I've been watching a crap ton of Formula One racing lately.
Okay.
That is awesome, and I think for people who aren't aware, Austin is one of the it's the only city in North or in the, at least in the United States that has a Formula One track. So the Circuit of the Americas, which is the American Formula One Grand Prix. It's going to be happening in October, but because of that and because of a couple other things, I've become an enormous fan of Formula One racing. Mercedes has kind of been running away with it for the past few years, but it's still a lot of fun. And if anyone wants to talk Formula One, then hit me up at LoganWTF on Twitter, because I'm always willing to talk about it because it's friggin' rad. I never thought I'd be into motor racing, but it's badass.
That's awesome, Logan. So, very brave of you to share. Thank you for sharing.
You being into motor racing and me not knowing anybody else who's into motor racing. The culture, the differences between Formula One and NASCAR.
Tinier cars.
Do you fall more in line with one versus the other?
Well, I'm definitely much more in the Formula One side of things. So, like the general idea, and you know, it's up for debate, of course. The general idea is that Formula One is much more the kind of, it's supposed to kind of be like the elite of the elite. It tends to be much more kind of European, you know. So like all the your Ferraris and your Mercedes and
the Sacha Baron Cohen's.
Yes, all okay. Those will participate in Formula One, whereas NASCAR is much more stock. It's you know, it's Chevy and Ford, it tends to be a little less refined. I hate to say that because NASCAR is elegant in its own way.
Which one is Ricky Bobby?
Both.
Yeah.
Okay. No.
Is it the difference between like beer and wine?
Hmm.
Oh, perhaps. But that's difficult to say because I'm more of a F1 fan, but I'm also more of a beer fan. So.
Oh, okay. Which is maybe why you like NASCAR a little bit.
No, I mean, I like NASCAR just because I actually Formula One and like just like Formula One gave me an appreciation for motorsport in general, and which made me a little bit more appreciative of NASCAR. I don't pay as much attention to that of American sports, American motorsports. I pay much more attention to IndyCar, which is closer to Formula One.
Got it.
which is also really, really super interesting.
So. Are you going to make your way out to F1 when it comes back to Austin?
Maybe. It's so expensive. Okay. It's like, if you want just like a one-day pass, it's like $150. And like, and the whole like Formula One weekend is 3 days. There's like your practice days, your qualifying days, and then your race days. Mm. I would love to be able to do that, but that's just for tickets for admission, not including like parking and like food, and I'm gonna have a couple of beers when I go out there, so yeah. I would like to do that, but
$1,000, you just said $1,000.
You want to do it the right way.
it's pretty expensive, but yeah, I've been onto the track a couple of times, and it's a gorgeous place, and it's a lot of fun. And if you want to get interested in just racing in general, like go out to a track, see it in person. It makes it makes much more sense, and it's really impressive, and it's a neat thing. So.
Or if anyone wants to sponsor us for a live remote, that's cool.
There you go. Yeah. All right, okay.
It's only $1,000.
I got an email from Circuit of America saying that they're accepting press passes, so, or accepting press applications. So
okay,
yeah,
all right,
sensational. Adam Charles, what are you watching?
So, how much fun of me would you make if I said catching up on Gilmore Girls?
None at all, because I fucking love that show.
My girlfriend's sitting right here, and she's like, yes!
So, then I'm watching the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Okay, so, my wife and I moved into a new house.
Don't blame it on your wife.
No, I'm not. Okay, I moved into a new house with the woman that I married. And
that's
so,
that's a cop out.
I can't name the woman that I married. Apparently, JC just said I can't say her name. So anyway, yes, I'm married, and yes, we. Okay.
Sorry, ladies.
I'm trying to watch Gilmore Girls.
Hypotheticals, man.
So
you know, it's interesting. That there's like a podcast called Gilmore Guys where they recap every single episode.
You're making this shit up.
It's a real thing. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a show that has like a really serious following, and people love it. And I think it's great. I haven't seen it,
So,
but I think it's awesome, and I think it's okay. I think it's
yeah. Very, so very the, yeah, one of the things that my wife and I like to do is, you know, there's a lot of TV that we missed, you know, at any given point in time. So Netflix reruns is how we caught up with West Wing. It's how we caught up with it's how we now started watching The Good Wife actually, you know, live as it's airing. Which, by the way, if people would sound like they're going to give me shit because they seem like female-centric shows aside from The West Wing. The Good Wife, I think, is actually one of the better shows of that ilk since The West Wing. Like, it's one of the best even-keeled, topical, political argumentative shows since The West Wing.
Is that the one about the First Lady?
No. The Good Wife, it's like a senator. It started technically as... She was the Alex Spitzer kind of thing. Like, okay. He was the attorney general, but something for the city of Chicago.
Guys.
The city attorney?
It's not important.
Oh, it is fucking important, but anyway, the important thing is that, yes, I'm catching up with Gilmore Girls. I'm two seasons in, and I love it. So well, leave it alone.
So super quick, really well written, full of nerdy references, isn't it?
Gilmore Girls? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. If you are a film geek,
yeah,
there are so many things in it that will just, aside from Lauren Graham's delivery and banter, you know, there are film references galore.
Yeah. How's Melissa McCarthy in it?
Really good.
She does. Yeah. I mean,
unlike now.
She is a, yeah, I mean, I guess I can see now where the appeal for Melissa McCarthy came from. Okay. Like, she's fucking adorable.
Yeah, no shtick to her, no nothing, yeah. Like, she's, yeah.
Yeah, so.
She's a real person.
Anyway, Gilmore Girls, leave me alone. What I'm watching, I'll probably be watching it probably for the next couple months.
This is the same place, we're good.
I love it.
I'm with you, man.
I love it. We're going to take a quick spa break, and we're going to come back. And we're going to sing some songs, and I think it'll be a special night. But unfortunately, you guys won't be around for it. Thank you for listening. We're inside the locker. I'm Ramon Ramirez, and I treasure your friendship.